Welcome back to the Physician Syndicate podcast. Here we go. We're going to be talking mostly about AI, something that we teased in one of the last episodes. And the reason we're going to talk about AI, it's everywhere. It's the new cool thing. We went from, you know, Web3, crypto, to full force into artificial intelligence. And why did we jump into artificial intelligence as the cool new thing to fund and to do? One primary, I guess, insider of all this is OpenAI. What is OpenAI? If you're a physician and you don't know what OpenAI is, go to Google, type in OpenAI, see what you can find. Basically, what they did was, I don't know, 3 or 4 months ago, they introduced something called ChatGPT version 3.5. And what you're able to do is use a search box to ask it to do basically anything you want it to do. You can ask it to tell you a bedtime story. You can ask it to take an article that you wrote 20 years ago and summarize it for you in a single paragraph. You can have it write USMLE questions for you if you wanted to start a new company. You can literally do or ask it to do almost anything. So that's what we're going to be talking about. How you doing, Ronak?
I'm doing well. I think artificial intelligence is a very exciting topic. Before we delve into everything going on with OpenAI and just where we think everything is going, I think it might be interesting to take a little step backwards. So as you might recall, I used to work as a data scientist at some of these larger tech companies. So got a chance to see how this industry has evolved over at least the last decade and have been studying how it's evolved over the last several decades. And although artificial intelligence is very heavily in the news right now, there actually is a really interesting history around this. And in our day-to-day lives, we actually use a lot of things surrounding artificial intelligence every single day, right? So if you think about every time you do a Google search, who actually ranks those pages? It's not an individual at Google that's like deciding that this link is ahead of that link. That's a series of artificial intelligence programs that are running in the background. All the way to if you're watching a TV show and you turn on the closed caption, right? You typically are not going to have somebody that's transcribing everything that's being said on the TV show, especially if it's live. So that also is a artificial intelligence program that's analyzing everything that's going on screen and being able to translate what the words being spoken or sometimes even what the scenes are in a relatively high quality fashion. I think as time has gone on, artificial intelligence is getting more and more nuanced and deeper in our everyday lives. So like when you log onto Facebook and you upload a picture of yourself, a lot of times it can accurately predict who are those friends that are also in that picture with you. If anybody has ever driven a Tesla, you see that there's all sorts of interesting artificial intelligence features there where cars can recognize, you know, where other humans are standing around the car, what other cars are around it. Is the light in front of you red or green at the moment? There's all sorts of different things where computers are just getting smarter and smarter. And I think what OpenAI has really done in the last few months is just show a leap forward. So one other trend that's going on in the world for the last, you know, couple decades, I would say, is the amount of data that's being produced from all the IoT devices out in the world, or just all the computers and cell phones and everything, is more and more data is being created. So a lot of these models, these artificial intelligence models, can suck in more and more data and just optimize on things with a much greater speed and much more impressive results. And I think OpenAI is sort of a cultivation of all of that, where, you know, everything that that's largely going on there is just in the textual space, but it's learning over so much of the internet and all the data that's out there that the results that it can produce are actually quite impressive.
I think the way that I think about this, because I've been listening to another podcast, the Acquired podcast, which goes into kind of doing deep dives into companies, and they're doing one on Nintendo right now. So I almost think about these AI models as similar to video games, right? So you had the original 8-bit Nintendo system, and then you had the Sega come out with a 16-bit, and then you had the N64, which was a 64-bit. And the way that you think about that is basically how much data those systems can process. So it's actually 2^8 power or 2^16 power or 2^64 power. So when you think about that, that's kind of what these AI algorithms. And with all of these new things that are coming out, they're just getting more and more powerful. They're getting faster. They're able to collect and use more data points. And that's the way that I'm thinking about it. So if you're a physician out there and you've played, you know, the original Nintendo, and then you went to the Super Nintendo, and then you went to the N64 or the PlayStation 3, you remember how those graphics just kept getting better and better, and the ability for them to use all of these different inputs and lightings and shades. You know, if you went from like the PlayStation 5 back down to the Nintendo, you will see a difference, right? And that's how I think about kind of AI, and especially with OpenAI and all of the different types of kind of these ChatGPT interfaces that they've had in the past, which were out, right? Like you could, as a developer, use the API, because originally it was an open API. And now you have the ChatGPT-4, and it's just getting better and better and better. And that's the way that I think about it is, you know, in 6 months or 1 year, is ChatGPT-4, this version right now, going to seem obsolete almost compared to what you're going to see in the future? I don't know about you, but Ronak, that's kind of how I think about it. I don't know if that's actually how, you know, we're going to see AI evolve into the future. There's a lot of talk around kind of how safe is this? Is this a dangerous thing? What are your thoughts on just where AI can go from here?
Yeah, so let's take a quick step back before going into where things are going, and just talk about one term real quick in the artificial intelligence space, and that's reinforced learning. So Greg, you just talked about video games and how they've evolved through the years. And I think it's really interesting to see how a Nintendo to a Super Nintendo to an N64, how that's improved basically year after year after year, and how things have gotten so much better. But if you look at some other artificial intelligence systems, being able to interact with the AI system is actually what improves it at an exponential rate instead of a linear rate. So if we use a simple Google search as an example, right? Google, if you run a search on Google, you get a list of 10 links or so. And each person that is running these Google searches, they click on a specific link, and that tells the machine essentially that this is the most high quality result for what I was searching for. So you're basically giving feedback to the artificial intelligence system, so that way it continuously gets smarter and smarter and smarter, which each additional person running new search engines. So as more people start using the search engines, it gets even smarter, it has better results, which leads to even more people using it, which leads to even more search results and more feedback. And you get this continuous loop where things just go absolutely exponential. And I think that's one interesting thing that we're seeing in the self-driving car world as well. Like, we've all been promised self-driving cars for years, and they're not really here. So I think one thing that's going on is that there's a lot of car manufacturers that's doing this by brute force, where they have like software engineers that are sitting in the front seat of the car, taking notes on like, you know, the car should operate this way versus that way, and trying to program everything in. That's not real artificial intelligence. I think what Tesla is actually doing is a lot closer, where it's taking a look at everything going on around the car. And whenever the driver engages autopilot, it's putting it in the self-driving mode. And then if you slam on the brakes and turn it off, then it's known as like, okay, something got messed up. So there's something to fix here. So that way the system is learning. It's getting reinforced information from the users of the product. So when we fast forward to OpenAI right now with ChatGPT, I think this is really interesting that like this is not just an artificial intelligence system that's just sitting there. It's actually getting better and better with everybody now using it. We're getting hundreds of thousands, millions of people that are running queries on it day in and day out, which means that the quality of the results can go exponential over time, which is a scary proposition for trying to predict the future, right? Somebody gets a little bit of viral attention, whatever their AI product is, and one day it's just, you know, it's a cute little toy, and then like 3 months later, it's this amazing production machine that is doing something fantastic. So I think that's just one important thing to realize, that there's two types of artificial intelligence algorithms out there: reinforced learning and non-reinforced learning. And I think the reinforced learning is what's really coming up to center stage here, and what has potential to really hit that exponential curve.
Yeah, so basically what Ronak is saying is everybody that's using OpenAI right now and ChatGPT you're making it better and better and better. Because when you, you know, put in a prompt, so there's actually now open positions at companies called prompt engineers, which are meant to basically be really good at writing prompts for OpenAI to then do tasks and automate things for companies or for individuals. When you're putting those prompts in, you're also afterwards, you can say, hey, make this more creative, make this shorter. And so you're giving it extra prompts to basically make it into exactly what you want it to ultimately look like, which I think is what the reinforcement learning is doing. Is you're asking for it to do additional things in order to take that initial product that it gave you or that output that it gave you and to make it a little bit better on the margins, or hey, this was completely off base, you know, repeat what you're doing, let's try again, make it, you know, a little more salesy or a little less salesy if you're writing an email to somebody. And so for physicians out there, they're like, well, I mean, how am I even going to use this eventually in like my own practice? Because like, you know, healthcare, there's always a bunch of, hey, this is going to change healthcare. It never does. So why is AI going to get into healthcare? You know, the way that I thought about it when I initially started playing around with it was any task that you do not like doing that feels monotonous, you could probably get this AI or somebody's AI to actually do for you. So as an example, a actual example in the world, discharge summaries. I hated writing discharge summaries because you have to do it within, you know, a week of the hospital discharge. You have to then go back into the chart and say, when did they have surgery? What were the complications of that surgery? What does the primary care physician need to know? All of those things. And especially if you, maybe you just got on service and you don't know the patient very well, but guess what? You just got stuck as the intern with the discharge summary. And maybe if you're in private practice, you have to do your own discharge summaries. Now imagine there's an AI quote unquote co-pilot within that medical documentation software, whether it's Epic or Cerner, whatever you use, that is auto creating that discharge summary for you and you just have to tweak it, right? So AI does amazing things with vast amounts of data and your notes, your lab values, your complications, it's all just data, right? That you're putting into the chart day in, day out. You know, was the patient septic? Did the patient do okay afterwards? Were they only there for 3 days? An AI algorithm can go in and look at every note you wrote while that patient was there, look at every single value, look at every single radiological report, and combine it into a very usable 1 or 2 page summary of that person's stay in the hospital, and it can create a discharge summary for you. I guarantee you it would probably be better than what I could have written, you know, going through the chart at home. You've worked 80 or 90 hours in the week, and you're just trying to finish these discharge summaries. Somebody's going to make that. I don't know if they are already, or hey, if you want to make it, we can help you fund it. Or maybe Epic's already working on something. Who knows? But those are the types of things that AI is going to be really, really good at, is summarization, taking a lot of disparate data, combining it into something useful. And then you as the physician can go back and say, is this accurate? So if you want to see this in practice, open up ChatGPT, get a quick login, you know, use ChatGPT 3.5. You don't have to pay for 4. Literally go find one of your old research papers, go onto PubMed, download the paper, and literally just copy and paste it, put it into the actual chat function and say, summarize this, and just see what it outputs and see how accurate or not it is. I've done it with a few of my papers and it's insane. Now imagine that's a patient's record and it does the exact same thing within 30 seconds.
So Greg, before we go over to like the nightmare Armageddon doomsday scenarios with artificial intelligence, let's stay with the world of healthcare and doctors and nurses specifically for a little bit. It's not inconceivable to think that like one day I might be able to take a picture of a rash on my leg and basically get that diagnosed where I don't need to go see a medical professional. Are there aspects of being a physician or a nurse that you see that aren't going to be disrupted by this?
I don't know if you're going to have a lot of like actual disruption where you're going to have physicians losing their job to an AI, but I do think it's going to make physicians a hell of a lot more efficient. So like I mentioned with the discharge example, you know, you're not going to have, at least in the next 20 or 30 years, an AI physician taking care of you in a hospital. I don't think that's ever going to exist. But I do think there are some areas of medicine that are going to become a lot more efficient. Something like radiology, which was my own specialty, right? an AI that can help you sort through which diagnostic studies you need to do first is something that's already being worked on. And I think that's going to be, you know, quote unquote disruptive, but I think more in a, you're going to be a lot more efficient and you're going to look at the images you need to look at first to make sure that patients are cared for in the appropriate order. I do think there are specialties that are never going to be disrupted by AI. Something like, you know, a surgical or procedural specialty. I don't think we're, at least in my lifetime, going to have robots completely operating autonomously. As an AI, mostly because when you deal with complications as a physician, sometimes they're completely unforeseen. And I just don't think that you're going to see that in our lifetime. But something that, sure, is more, you know, quick diagnosis, like, hey, there's pathology slides that can be looked at by an artificial intelligence program that can then go back and look at every slide it's ever seen before, you know, compare it and contrast it and say, this is the three top diagnostic possibilities. Again, I think that is possible. I think that's coming within the next 10 years. Is it going to replace physicians? I don't think so. I think it's going to make you much more efficient. So if you're a pathologist and you're looking at, you know, a set of, let's say you have 100 different pathology slides from the recent surgeries that have been done at the hospital, you're probably going to have the top three diagnostic possibilities for each of those before you even open it up to start looking yourself. And then you can say, yep, I agree with the AI. And guess what? As you filter that data and as you give it more data, it's going to get better and better and better. So if there is a diagnostic, you know, conundrum between two possible diagnoses, you're eventually going to go ask maybe for more tissue or to do some genetic testing to then confirm what the diagnosis is. And now that AI knows that, hey, now this is a confirmed diagnosis, I can now be a little bit more accurate and maybe even gives you percentages, you know, 87% likely this is glioblastoma versus something else. I think all of those things are going to happen within the next 5 to 10 years. And I think you will see them in clinical practice. The thing that we have to think through is like, how do you actually get those things approved, right? So that's a completely different talk, which is, you know, when you're creating new diagnostic or new treatments for patients that are based off of AI, how do you get those clinically approved by whether it's the FDA or somebody else to actually become useful in practice? I think that's a whole other conversation, but I think you're going to see the ability to do these things very, very quickly based off of what you see right now from artificial intelligence, whether it's image recognition or LLMs or whatever.
So my guess, not being a healthcare professional, the people that can leverage artificial intelligence to take care of a lot of their more administrative and non-exciting parts of the role, so that way folks can actually focus on performing surgeries or dealing with patients or whatever it is, people are going to be far more efficient and being able to spend time on their true art and craft of helping people get better and healthier and stronger. Which, Greg, you and I have looked at the burnout space within the healthcare industry. This actually might be an interesting solve for it, that like if people are spending significantly less time on administrative work, I would guess that most physicians and nurses would be happier with their jobs.
Yeah, I think this is the most interesting piece around artificial intelligence getting into medicine. So the less crap that you have to take care of as a physician that is not at the top of your license, likely the happier you're going to be as a practicing doctor. So as an example, again, we'll go back to discharge summaries. I don't know too many people that like doing discharge summaries. So if you can take that task that maybe takes you 3 hours a week and get it down to 5 minutes, that's a huge time savings that, guess what, you get to go home and spend more time with your family, or you get to go home and exercise, or you get to go home and cook rather than having fast food or Subway on the way home. Those are the things that I think are going to be most interesting to physicians to utilize AI for, and I think also the most helpful. So not just discharge summaries, but, you know, there's plenty of startups that are doing kind of like the listen to your conversation with a patient and automatically transcribe that into a useful clinical documentation note. So if you're a primary care physician and you're seeing 80 patients in a day, if you already have those 80 notes being 75% transcribed just from listening to you and the patient respond, that's also super helpful, where now you can be more efficient. My only concern with all those things is, as the clinic sees, hey, you're able to do, you know, have 30 or 40 patients seen in a single day, let's up that to 40 or 50. And then you're doing the same amount of work just with more patients. That's my only big concern with a lot of these things is the bottom line for the people that are the administrators or the CEOs of those hospital systems is, oh, we're getting more efficient. Let's give the physicians more and more work to do. That's where my concern immediately goes with becoming more efficient is we're just going to give you more work because you can handle it. But yeah, I mean, the benefits of AI to the physician, I think is you're right, coming from those tasks that you really just don't want to do. Prior auths, anything that has to do with insurance coverage, anything that has to do with overburden of clinical documentation, you know, you get the emails from the billing department, hey, you need to add this word to this note in order for us to bill at this level. Nobody wants to deal with that as a physician. You want to deal with your patients. You want to work with your patients. That's what you got into medicine for. You didn't get it into do more Epic notes and discharge summaries so that your hospital department can bill more for that insurance, blah, blah, blah. That's not why you did it. And I do think that's where the benefit of AI can come from. But also for the physicians out there that are listening, that are more entrepreneurial, take the task that you hate in medicine and figure out how do I build an AI system to get rid of this BS. If you can do that and take the boring task and say, I'm going to reduce that by 90% for other physicians, A, you're going to build a really big company, but B, you're also going to make it a lot more bearable to be in medicine and maybe people don't leave left and right.
So two quick things on that. So one, I think the scale's far past just the medical industry. If you're a lawyer or you're an accountant or, you know, pick your profession almost, I think it makes a lot of sense to spend at least a little bit of time learning what's going on in the artificial intelligence space and seeing how any of your jobs or menial tasks can be automated so you can spend more time with your families or friends or just doing more interesting things that you're excited by. This is a pretty big trend in a lot of the products that are being put out there. You don't need to be an AI expert to leverage these tools, right? Like, Greg, can you explain what a support vector machine is?
No.
Can you use OpenAI's ChatGPT?
Yes, quite well.
There you go. Okay. So you don't need to be a true artificial intelligence expert to be able to leverage this stuff in your workplace or in your entrepreneur endeavors. So like Greg is saying, take some of these tools that are out there. OpenAI, ChatGPT is probably the easiest program out there to just start playing around with it and just seeing what it can do. And it doesn't really matter what your profession is. The way that I kind of look at it is that if I rewind back to my elementary school, I remember taking a class called Talking Fingers, where they would teach us where all of the different letters are on the keyboard and how to memorize that. I wouldn't be surprised if, like, in a few years from now, elementary school kids are taking classes on artificial intelligence, not necessarily learning the latest algorithms of, like, random forest and support vector machines and things like that and how neural networks work, but artificial intelligence classes on like how to use this technology for different aspects of their day-to-day lives. I think the educational world is about to get flipped upside down where it's not about memorization and just figuring out how to do things a few times, but like how do you take the skill set and actually apply it in different ways and have a huge leg up against the rest of the competition.
All right, so let me give you another example of how when I think of what you can do with large language models like this that are extremely powerful. So we've talked about in the past, one of the things that I wanted to make within FlipMD was how do you get rid of market research firms? So the idea that I had 2 years ago is now extremely feasible without me having to go hire a natural language processing expert. You can do that likely through just the tools that are already available that you could plug into. So the idea was, if anybody wants to go out and do this, maybe we'll fund it, is can you take a physician interview? And you could actually probably now have the AI interview you. So let's say you're an orthopedic surgeon and Stryker wanted to go out and do market research with 100 different orthopedic surgeons about what should they build next. You know, is it a new shoulder replacement? Is it new knee replacement? Like whatever. And they want to interview 100 different joint replacement surgeons. So in order to do that, they go to a market research firm and they say, you need to find 100 different orthopedic surgeons that are willing to talk to you for 30 minutes or an hour. You need to then transcribe that, and you need to go and analyze all of those interviews and give us the data back in a readable, easily digestible format. I honestly think with the tools we have today, you could probably do that with just artificial intelligence straight out of ChatGPT. So you could have a Zoom interview done by your AutoGPT co-pilot that's asking the correct questions, analyzing your responses, transcribing it in real time, asking you follow-up questions based around what you just said, and then have a 45-minute interview completely transcribed already, which then automatically goes into a large language model to then digest that, find what are the commonalities between your interview and the 95 other ones that they've done, and then basically create a sentiment analysis around how do you feel about Stryker products right now? What are the new products that you're looking to have built? And have that done within a week. Market research typically like that will take 6 months to 18 months to do and costs millions of dollars. That is a prime area for disruption. And you can do it right now without having to hire an entire engineering department around just the artificial intelligence. I remember when we were looking into this, there was one group that was doing something even close to was usable back then. It is now 100 times better with OpenAI's framework. So I don't know if that company is going to exist very much longer, because literally OpenAI has introduced all of these different products that they have through their ChatGPT and all their other kind of APIs and calls that they can do. And that company was the cutting edge of what was possible. And we couldn't even think about actually building that product because it wasn't good enough. It is good enough now, and it is going to be so much better as it gets reinforced, like Ronak was talking about. You can build crazy products that make things much more efficient and disrupt industries that look boring, but they don't have the tech stack to go out and compete with a new startup that's going to be doing something. So again, if you just took that idea, right, and you change it from being a $1 million project that takes 6 months, and it becomes a $50,000 project, which is really just the physician's time, and it takes a week. That's an incredibly disruptive technology to the entire market research industry that has those Stryker accounts, those Johnson & Johnson accounts, those Pfizer accounts. You can build that today if you wanted to. Me, I don't really feel like it, but you could.
So a couple episodes, Greg talked about no code and low code products, being able to put together, you know, MVP products where it doesn't take very much coding or any engineering resources at all. When you combine those type of offerings with something like a ChatGPT or some sort of like artificial intelligence bot that can really help you along, the type of products and services that can be put out in the world, in case there is any physician out there that is thinking about starting their own company, I mean, there's just so many tools at your disposal to get going and build some relatively complex products without having to write a single line of code. So I think both Greg and I would love to just encourage anyone out there that if you're thinking about starting a company, go and do it. This is the time to try things out and just seeing what you can put together, because we are going through some definite step change functions right now in the world. Greg, so one thing I do want to get your take on is why you think that this is a true pivotal moment in the world. In the tech industry, we've seen some technologies come by that fulfilled their promise and some that didn't, right? So like the PC, the internet, the mobile phone, these were pretty big changes in the way that we're living our lives. But then you also have things like the jetpack or 3D televisions, or you could maybe say cryptocurrencies, that like didn't quite live up to all the hype that was there. I think part of the reason why this is so exciting right now is we actually have some of the tools to play around with, and it seems like we're seeing the beginnings of something magical. But is there anything more that like gives you hope or gives you a reassurance that like this actually is going to be something pretty significant going forward?
I think a lot of the things that you mentioned in terms of like the hype cycle, right, did not pan out, mostly because, especially if you go back to the crypto thing, like what value creation is actually there? I don't know. It's debatable. But when you look at previous technological step changes that you've had in the past from, like you said, the internet, mobile, I think this is the next kind of step change that's going to completely change all technology moving forward. When you think about it, you can now have a state-of-the-art artificial intelligence machine that lives on your cell phone, which is insane. I think it's the same thing that you think about when you thought about Apple coming out with the iPhone and starting basically the mobile internet, mobile apps and everything like that. I think you're going to have a lot of really important companies that are built on top of AI models that were just not possible 3 years ago. I think you're going to have a lot of really cool applications on top of AI that are just going to make the world extremely more efficient. Like I mentioned, like if we had any thought of actually creating that market research competitor, we would have needed to hire an NLP person, an ML person, an artificial intelligence person in order to have any shot at building a product that actually worked, and it would have taken years. You can literally plug and play with the OpenAI stuff right now and build that same product within probably a couple months, maybe even less, if you're dedicated to it full time. So I do think that this is a new paradigm. It's a paradigm shift that is going to make things a lot more efficient, and you're going to have, again, we've talked about this a little bit, you know, building a company used to take millions of dollars to just get the software engineers to build a website. You can now do that with no code, low code. And now you have basically an entire AI engineering team in the form of a single company where you can pay $20 a month to get ChatGPT-4. I think that it's basically just taking the technological cost of building a company almost to zero, which is crazy. I think you're going to have a gigantic amount of companies that are being built. And I do think a lot of them will fail, right? So that's going to happen. A lot of these companies will outcompete each other and maybe even bring the cost of things down so significantly that none of them can actually have relatively good margins. Maybe they just get sold off for the parts and eventually get, you know, bought out by a bigger company that's just going to combine them with other iterations of AI that they have. But I do think that you're going to see gigantic companies building on top of this new AI layer that has just become so easy to use, and you can get it into a lot of different industries that don't necessarily see this revolution coming and take up a gigantic amount of market and mind share within those industries and create a ton of value. And I do think healthcare is prime for something like this. And you're going to have a lot of companies that are doing little tiny things within these small vertical niches that are also going to become very powerful in big companies, because anything within the healthcare industry that's going to make physicians more efficient has eventually a pretty big TAM.
Okay, Greg, you mentioned startups there. So I do want to double click on that a little bit. We have a ton of startups that are getting into the artificial intelligence game right now. I think when we were looking at the latest Y Combinator class, what, probably like 75% of the companies were like
at least
artificial intelligence focused, right? It was ridiculous. So I think it is important for anybody that's considering investing in AI startup companies to proceed with caution. Yes, there is a lot of dynamic activity happening here, and we might be on the brink of seeing the next Amazon or the next Apple being born right now with these artificial intelligence technologies. But there are so many companies being able to pick and choose the right one. And I think there's a lot of fraudsters out there too, right? When I was working in big tech at all these Facebook, Tesla type companies in the data science world, it was very depressing to hear how many machine learning experts could not even explain to me what cross-validation is. There's a lot of hype in the space, a lot of dressing things up where people are saying that they're artificial intelligence first, they're machine learning experts, they have the best software engineers in the world. But if you're thinking about investing in one of these companies, I think it's actually really important not to talk to the CEO, but who's actually writing code at the company? Who's actually building these models? And are they just taking something off the shelf that they're just like doing Google searches on? Or are they actually writing some like innovative modeling here? Are they actually writing some groundbreaking code? And I think that that's really important to figure out who's actually doing things that are technologically unique, or who is just really good at putting together a PowerPoint presentation to convince investors of what they're doing. And this actually might be an interesting place where I think that maybe investing in a venture capital firm might actually be a little bit more interesting than investing in directly into an AI startup company. The reason I say that is a venture capital firm, you typically raise a lot of money and then invest in maybe like 10, 20, 30, 50 different companies and sort of diversifies that risk. And the hope is that one of those companies ends up becoming the next Google. As an individual investor, I think it's really risky to just put all your eggs in one basket if you're only going to invest in like one or two startups that are out there, right? You just happen to get connected with the next Google, maybe, but I think it probably is a good idea to diversify your investments a little bit. And the second thing is to leverage experts that can actually go and understand the technology behind what's going on, right? Especially if you're a physician, right? Like you're spending your day working with patients, working with hospital administration, right? Like you're probably not the type of person that's going to go to a startup company and say, hey, let me take a look at your code repository and see which Python packages you're pulling in to build out your modeling, right? But by looking at a venture capital firm or something like that, they might be partnering with some technical experts that are actually going to do some of that due diligence. This is an area where I would take PowerPoint presentations with a little bit of a grain of salt, look at the product, how it's functioning, and have somebody that actually has the coding expertise to go in to understand what's actually going on behind the scenes before making a big investment. Any thoughts on the due diligence side of things for these artificial intelligence, Greg?
Yeah, I think this comes back to the point, can you use the product? If you can use the product for yourself and understand what it does and how it works, even just a little bit, that at least de-risks it a little bit, right? So if you know, hey, this new company is building this new tool on AI within the healthcare space, can I get a user account? Can I just see what you're doing, see how it works, and see what the output looks like? Speaking of companies that are actually doing something within the AI space within healthcare, I pulled up four different companies from the latest Y Combinator batch. Again, so that was winter 2023. They just had their demo day like last week. So these companies are likely still raising capital or just recently closed their rounds. I haven't invested in any of these companies myself. I was interested in talking to one of them, but the round closed. I won't say which one that was. But if you're one of these founders that are building something within the healthcare AI space and would like to come onto the podcast and talk about it, let's go. So the first company I have pulled up is called Latent. So if you go to the Y Combinator website, you can actually look at every startup that's ever gone through YC. And you can just filter by winter 23 to find these companies for yourself and to take a look. So Latent, what they're building is medical language models to tackle the trillions of operational overhead weighing down healthcare. Our flagship product streamlines insurance authorization by analyzing EHR records and surfacing the most relevant data. So they're going after prior auths, it looks like, which is something that a lot of companies in the past have gone after. So the biggest one being Olive AI was the big player within that space. I think they had layoffs recently. Anyways, Latent is going after, looks like, prior auth. The next one I have pulled up, Orchid. AI-powered EHR for independent mental health professionals. Looks like it says they save time, money, and frustration by integrating core admin workflow, streamlining clinical processes, and automating manual flow. So basically everything we talked about, right? Taking all the things that you don't feel like doing because they're all manual tasks that are not at the top of your license. Looks like they're going after that. Great. Another one, Fairway Health. AI assistant for health insurers to quickly process patient treatment authorizations, another prior auth company. We use LLMs to analyze long 70 plus page messy medical records and determine if a patient is eligible for a treatment. So same thing, they're both going after prior auth. And then you have Glass Health. We empower doctors with AI assisted diagnosis and clinical decision making. So this one looks like they've basically created, similar to the ChatGPT search bar, their own kind of ChatGPT function where you can put in clinical information and get information back, whether that's, you know, potential diagnostic information or treatment decision-making information. So this one looks like it's basically trying to be a co-pilot for you and your clinical lives. So maybe eventually they have an app. I don't know if they do already. Similar to if you were to go and search a diagnosis on UpToDate. It seems like that's basically what they're going for, but instead of having to look for an article and then find the actual location of that information, you can basically just type it in and get that information right to your actual web interface, whether it's a computer or your phone. So those are the ones that I found within the healthcare space that came through the YC Winter 2023 batch. You can expect there's probably a lot more that are going to come through the summer 2023 batch. So we'll keep you guys updated on kind of what we find within the healthcare space and AI. But just know AI is coming for medicine. You have to know what it is capable of. And then also how it could hopefully affect some of your day-to-day workflows and make your life a little bit more, hopefully, easy in the long term. I don't think it's coming for your job right away, but it is out there. At least know what the possibilities are.
So before we close out today's episode, let's touch on one more topic, and that's sort of the scarier side of AI. There's a lot of prominent folks right now that are trying to stop AI progress, saying that like we need to do more research on this stuff. We shouldn't just like put it out into the world that there's everything from misinformation issues going on.
There's some people concerned that it's almost going to be like the Y2K event, right? Where computers will decide that their primary goal is to save humanity. And with that in mind, they realize that we're the greatest threat to our own humanity and go and turn off all the systems that we rely on. I think honestly, that's like the Armageddon version of the concern with AI.
So I think the classic example is if you tell an AI system, you know, how do we get rid of cancer in all human beings? And the artificial intelligence system decides to just kill all humans. And that's, I guess, one way to get rid of cancer, but that's not an outcome that we probably want. There's also the concern that other countries around the world are developing these type of technologies at a very rapid rate. So this is kind of like the development of the nuclear bomb that, yeah, we kind of want to go slow and figure things out and not rush into it. But at the same time, if we end up purposefully slowing things down, are other regimes and other countries going to come and sprint ahead of us? And we don't really know the ethical ramifications of like what they're doing with their research. So it's an interesting world where we have to strike the right balance. I hope our government and our leaders are thinking about this in the appropriate way to figure out how we can stay ahead of, you know, other countries that are out there, but making sure that nothing breaks at the same time. And we, you know, as you're saying, let the genie out of the bottle.
Yeah, we're definitely not a geopolitical show, but these things do have geopolitical consequences. When you think about it, if you want, you know, the US to continue being kind of the dominant, one of the top powers in the world, AI is definitely going to become part of that. And the folks that allow innovation to happen are likely going to continue being the power in the world. I get how people are worried about it. But again, like you said, if we stop, it doesn't mean any other country is going to stop developing artificial intelligence tools and new platforms and new capabilities. I really do think that we need to continue, hopefully morally and ethically along a certain line. But I do think that if we slow down, nobody else in the world is necessarily going to slow down. And you may not end up being that dominant player within a space that might prove to be one of the most important spaces to be a dominant player in. With that said, that was our AI day. If you're interested in, you know, hearing about other topics, feel free to send them to either Greg or Ronak at physicians.vc. And if you have anybody else in your world, in your orbit, that's interested in tech, startup funding, startup founding, or if you're a physician that's interested in any of those topics, reach out to the other folks around you. Let them know about the podcast. We're going to continue putting out, hopefully, daily content, at least during the weekdays. And we hope to see you back for the next episode of the Physician Syndicate podcast.
Thank you for tuning in to today's episode. As always, we'd like to remind you that the information and opinions expressed on this podcast are for educational and entertainment purposes only and should not be construed as financial or investment advice. Before making any investment decisions, we strongly recommend that you consult with your lawyer, tax professional, and financial planner. Keep in mind that investing in startups can be extremely risky, and there's a potential for loss of your entire investment. Remember to always conduct thorough research and consider your risk tolerance before making any financial decisions. Stay informed, and we look forward to having you join us on our next episode of the Physician Syndicate podcast.